Hi, I'm Fred Schonenberg, and thank you for joining me on the Venture Fuel podcast. At Venture Fuel, we help companies find new solutions by partnering with the best startups from around the world. On the show, you'll learn the secrets of business leaders who tap into startups and the founders driving extraordinary results. We'll consider new ideas, stretch our mindsets beyond the status quo, and in the process, discover how to leap the competition and fuel personal growth. On today's show, we have Phil Graves, who's basically the Wyatt Earp of corporate sustainability. Most recently, the Chief Sustainability Officer of Bass Pro Shops, the world's largest outdoor retailer and recreational boat manufacturer. Before that, he was the VP of Corporate Development at Patagonia, where he was also the founding and managing partner of Tin Shed Ventures. Phil's expertise and entrepreneurial spirit have helped these companies drive positive environmental and social impact that's inseparable from their profit. We're going to talk about impact investing, profits to save the planet, and I hope maybe toss in a few reference to Tombstone, as apparently Phil and I both like this film. So anyway, let's get after it. Phil, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, and certainly appreciate the Tombstone reference, though I'm not Wyatt or by any stretch of the imagination.
I was trying to think how we could weave it in. I mean, we were joking over email beforehand that like the whole show should just be like veiled references to it. And I hadn't thought about that movie in a long time till our exchange. So for those listening, Phil's response when we asked him to be on the show was, "I'm your Huckleberry," which not only led to us having a good exchange, but my college roommates and I went down the path of trading some quotes back and forth. So it's made for a fun week.
Love it.
So let's stick on the movie trailer idea. Can you give us the Phil Graves story? Because as I started diving in, I saw your CPA, a CFA, you worked at Deloitte, PwC. So when and how did you get into conservation and innovation, and kind of just take us through the journey?
Yeah, happy to share my story. So coming out of school at Texas A&M University, I was on the traditional finance path. So worked for consulting firms for about a decade, trying to help companies grow their top line revenue, increase profitability, look at things like mergers and acquisitions, international expansion, new divisions, those types of things. And while it was certainly rewarding work in terms of solving hard business problems and helping our clients navigate opportunities for growth and sometimes some turbulent waters, it always was in the back of my mind about, you know, we spend so much of our time at work. Isn't there an opportunity to align some of the things that we're personally excited about, whether it's organic agriculture or fair trade labor, and tie these things into business models? And the timing was sublime. That's when Patagonia was diversifying beyond making and selling high quality durable goods, but getting into things like corporate venture capital and regenerative and organic food by standing up Patagonia Provisions, which was the in-house food division, yeah. Films, those types of things. And it was a perfect opportunity for me to use my background as a CPA and chartered financial analyst to look at making investments that can have environmental and social returns that are inseparable from profit, and ideally tie as many of those innovations as we possibly can into the Patagonia supply chain, scale it up, launch the product, and then open source it for other companies to follow. And it's been a great ride. I can't imagine going back to a traditional business once I've had the opportunity to work for triple bottom line companies.
Can you go back a little bit? Because, you know, when I first came across you was with Tin Shed Ventures, as we mentioned, as part of Patagonia. Can you maybe share some of your big wins from that time? How maybe Tin Shed came to be? Just would love that sort of origin story and maybe some of the highlights from your experience there.
Yeah, well, I'll give a tip of the cap to Rose Marcario, my former boss, former CEO of Patagonia. She did the heavy lifting, and that was talking with the Chouinards, the founders of Patagonia, about how we could create our own path in venture capital. Melinda had a negative perception of venture capitalists. I think a few times she's referred to them as vulture capitalists because she's known friends who have been burned by some deals with venture capital and private equity shops. But we said, no, we'll take a different approach. We'll take a long-term view. We'll provide patient capital. And our end game is to find the next generation of Yvon Chouinard so we can have more Patagonias in the future and give them the capital. And even more importantly than that, the tools that they need to succeed in doing so. So a couple of the wins, it's challenging to highlight stories because there's so many rich memories that I have from the time there and watching entrepreneurs do great things. But one that I'm particularly proud of is in a startup called Boreo, and they're starting to progress out of that startup phase now, where they're helping companies bring recycled materials into their supply chains to move away from virgin petroleum-derived materials. So with Boreo, their recycled material is unique in that it's fishing nets. Commercial fishing nets represent 10% of all the plastic waste in the ocean, according to the UN. And they built a business model to collect these nets at the end of their lives. They initially started by pulling that through via their own products, things like skateboard decks made of the fishing net plastic and frames for sunglasses. Then when we invested, we realized working with Karen, who's part of your team now, actually on the Patagonia Materials team, that we use a lot of the same nylon 6 and HDPE plastic in the Patagonia supply chain. So rolled out with trucker hats and has since followed on with multiple products. That what I'm really excited about is not only in this case is it a win within the Patagonia supply chain, but also they're working with some of the other biggest apparel and headwear companies in the world. And I've seen that Net Plus plastic flow through in many other companies' brands. And that's something that I'm really heartened to see. And it's great to see this little bit of capital in the early stage of the Boreo journey that's resulted in a transformation across many different companies' supply chains.
I love it. I mean, it's such a perfect story for the opportunity that, you know, founders and early stage companies have, right? They see a problem that personally upsets them or challenges them, or they think there's a better way. And then they go out and create that solution. And then once a large company gets involved, just how those two can multiply each other and improve the world and make a, you know, financial impact, but also inspire others like copycat companies or even other big companies to find different ways to do the same thing just to keep up.
Yeah, absolutely. I love the idea of creating new business models and supply chains. Another example is Wild Idea Buffalo. It's a company that has grass-fed, grass-finished, and grass-harvested American bison. And if you contrast that model, which sequesters carbon in the Great Plains, to the traditional confined animal feeding operations, it's a stark contrast. So being able to support entrepreneurs like that, on that case with Wild Idea Buffalo, we pulled through jerky through the Patagonia Provisions supply chain and boots, some of the Patagonia workwear boots are made from the bison leather. But it's showing that there's not only alternative paths available out there, but you can make financially sound investments in these types of companies.
So let's stay there, because one of the things, you know, we hear a lot about is impact investing, and that there are these, you know, is it a charity versus driving actual returns, right? So as somebody that's been an investor in the space, have you weighed this good for the earth with a need or a financial responsibility for a return on investment?
Sure. So I think ultimately you're going to have impact investments that can result in sustainable businesses and provide fair returns to the entrepreneurs themselves that are building these businesses, as well as the outside investment capital they take on. So I think you can totally have both. There are going to be examples where a Patagonia or another company will make a strategic investment that could be concessionary just to help kickstart something. But I'll tell you, Fred, when I look at the portfolio of investments that we made and then some of the other firms that I've gotten to know quite well over the years, you can have upper quartile financial performance and some incredible environmental and social returns that come alongside those. So I firmly believe you can have both. I think you have to ask a lot of questions, closely examine the supply chain and look at the business model and understand if it's scalable. But this negative perception of impact investments are expensive, they're going to result in very high failure rates, it's simply not true. We had more than a dozen investments while I was at 10 Shed, formerly called 20 Million and Change. And the survival rate when I transitioned out was 100% over that 7-year time period.
Let me switch gears to you move over to Bass Pro Shops. When I saw you were leaving, I kind of was thinking, I didn't know much about Bass Pro Shops, but for the conversation, I started diving in and seeing the sort of conservational history of its founder, Johnny Morris. Can you talk a little bit about what attracted you to that role and the opportunity there?
Sure. So one of the things that Rose and I had talked about many times during our run together at Patagonia is, why don't more businesses operate in this responsible way? Patagonia is not perfect and no company is, but having that earnest quest to have continuous improvement with supply chains and reducing footprints, it was something that I think should resonate from coast to coast, not necessarily just in California with companies like Patagonia. And so as a chance to prove that theory out, I recognize that when you look at conservationists and hunters and anglers, they have actually quite a bit in common with companies that are part of this responsible business movement. As humans, we all want clean air, pure water, abundant fish and wildlife for our kids and kids coming after them to enjoy. And as businesses and business leaders, we have to recognize that we have a tremendous amount of impact or harm depending on the decisions that we make and how businesses operate. And so being able to come to an organization, apply the learnings that I have from my time at Patagonia is something that's incredibly interesting. And I hope more and more companies adopt these principles over time. And I think the customer trends and demographics where you see millennials and younger generations voting with their dollars and demanding transparency within supply chains, it's not going to be simply a nice to have or competitive edge for some companies. It's going to be table stakes to compete in the next generation of capitalism.
I agree. One of the things I saw on the website as I was doing research was, quote, we do not inherit the earth from our ancestors. We borrow it from our children, from Chief Seattle. And that jumped at me. I have a toddler at home. We were just kind of sharing stories on kids. And like an amazing call to action from the fact that like, this isn't about maybe what we've inherited, but more so what are we going to leave for our kids and our kids' kids? So along those lines, what are you most proud of in terms of what you've achieved at your time at Bass Pro Shop?
Yeah. So, I mean, at the end of the day, it's the power of teamwork. I'm really heartened to see that so many people are fired up for making moves in sustainability, looking at cobbling together task forces from different functions. And the movement is here to stay. I think that clear link between sustainability and conservation, and as Chief Seattle said, as you referenced, we have to think about these decisions in future generations, not in terms of making a bunch of money in our professional lives and leaving a pile of it to our kids, but there's simply far more that we need to consider when making our personal and professional decisions.
So a lot of our listeners are at large companies and usually in an innovation function or C-suite on the strategy side of things. If you were going to advise them, what are most companies missing in their sustainable innovation strategy right now? What do they need to do in order to start being thought of in the same breath as Patagonia or other folks that are at the forefront of this?
I'd start with your supply chain. When you dig into it, my guess is that regardless of industry, the lion's share of your overall footprint is going to be tied in some form to supply chain. It's certainly the vast majority of Patagonia's carbon footprint or Bass Pro's carbon footprint. So look at the products that you merchandise or manufacture and then hit that supply chain hard. There are often off-the-shelf solutions that can have the same or better performance with less environmental harm. And in cases where there isn't a clear path to that, there's a lot of development partners that are making good strides. So look at how you can plug into those organizations through a venture capital investment or through an advisory relationship, a commercial offtake agreement. A lot of times, an LOI from a large company is all that's needed for some of these hungry startups to get the venture funding they need and ultimately be successful in offering this next generation of technology. So just a few thoughts on how bigger companies can plug in and support this ecosystem for sustainability and environmental and social good.
I love your point about the LOI. So as you know, our whole business is helping large corporations and industry leaders innovate faster by collaborating with startups. And oftentimes the first thought is, oh, then we need to launch a CVC oh, we're going to have to make investments. We're going to have to do this. We're going to have to do that. And what I've said frequently, and we've built it in one of our frameworks is all around this, is no, you actually just need to work with them. It can be a commercial agreement. It can be a pilot test. Once they have that, you're a blue chip company. They now have the sort of proof they need to go raise money or to get other clients. And so oftentimes it's just about engaging and looking for new solutions to existing problems.
100%. And I think oftentimes large corporates are waiting for something to be fully baked and they're playing from a position of fear. Like I tell my daughter when she's playing soccer not to, but sometimes it's okay just to jump in when something is still evolving. There may be a cost premium out of the gate and just start with a product or start with a business unit and experiment, and then you'll learn and pivot over time. But I think that LOI, the commercial relationship that you can establish with these early stage companies, is as, if not more important than the capital you could provide to them.
Let me ask you this. What companies do you think are currently doing this well? Is there anybody in your sort of purview? Obviously, we've talked about a few that you've kind of helmed the ship for, but is there anybody else as you look out that you said, boy, these folks are really dedicated to this and making great strides?
Yeah, one of my heroes in the regenerative business space is David Bronner, who is the CEO, Cosmic Engagement Officer for Dr. Bronner's Soaps and Personal Care. And I love what they do in terms of not just sourcing responsible raw materials, but if it doesn't exist, they will literally build supply chains from scratch and have been doing that for decades. And much the same way that Patagonia and other companies have done. But I just think highly of companies that have done that for many, many years and have established a successful business and have a bit of a cult following, because one, they offer great products, but two, you know that they are going to do everything they possibly can to build a regenerative business that holistically thinks about its impact across people and the planet.
So I'm going to flip a little bit and go more personal. One of the things, and we've had several guests over the years here talking about sustainability and things we can do, but oftentimes individuals feel that they can't make a sizable enough contribution, right, to make change here. How do you think about that as an individual? Are there, you know, things that you do, or what are your ambitions for a sustainable future from your personal life, if that makes sense as a question?
It absolutely does. I think you have to look at your entire life holistically, minimize your commutes, look at the products that you buy. Food is something that each of us, if we're fortunate to be able to do so, makes a decision about every day and buying food and feeding ourselves and our family. So is the food that you are eating, is that from a local source, a regenerative organic source, or is it from a faraway place that's processed and extractive in terms of our finite resources? So I think looking at what you eat, looking at what you buy, working in the local economies as much as you can, and then ideally have a deeper connection to land. I think what one of the things that's creating this shift in a consumptive capitalistic model is that more people don't get outside and appreciate nature. And if you're not outside appreciating nature, you're not going to enjoy it and then conserve it and then ultimately protect it. So I think just spending the time in creation and enjoying it, recognizing that your individual decisions you make as a parent or partner to someone and what you buy or consume has an impact on these very special places that we want to pass on, like Chief Seattle said, to future generations in a better state.
Are there any innovations or new companies that you've seen that you're really excited about that might not be on the grid of the every person that isn't playing in the space every day? Is there anything that gets you juiced up?
Ooh, absolutely. So I'll pivot from the Tin Shed portfolio companies. There's a website where they're listed, and I think they're all doing incredible things. But there's a company I talked to last week called Fleet Zero, and their business model is to create a carbon-free shipping economy. So if you think about container ships moving goods across the world, the innovation that they're having is simply looking at very large batteries that could be plugged into different cargo ships like Legos that will be ultimately cost competitive or result in cost savings compared to diesel ships. So I think that's a startup I'm excited about. Hopefully more large companies will look at their transportation footprint and find new solutions like that.
Awesome. Well, Phil, this has been a pleasure. Thank you so much for your time and also for all that you're doing. to spark change in the world. It's just very exciting.
Likewise, Fred, keep up the great work as well. Really appreciate the time.
Thanks so much for joining us today. If you enjoyed this episode, please click subscribe, leave a note on what you thought, share it with your friends. Also, go to @VentureFuel on LinkedIn. That's where you can find out about all of our future events, see new podcasts and behind the scenes type of information, as well as we share a lot of startups and new ventures to watch. Thanks so much for listening. Until next time.